Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 85 of Nerd Pride Radio. 85. You know what? The XF-85 Goblin. Have you ever heard of it? That is an airplane. Technically, it's class Parasite Fighter. All right. This is a tiny little plane. Like, literally, it could fit in my living room. All right? And yet, it's jet-powered. All right? It's nothing but, honestly, a cockpit sitting on top of a jet with some swept-back wings. All right? This thing, why would we need it? What was it for? Turns out, the B-36 bomber had some problems because it needed escorts. It needed fighter jets around it. This is, 40, 50, 60 years ago. I can't remember when it came out. And it needs fighter jets as escorts because otherwise it's under attack by enemy fighters. It needs something to defend it. And the problem is that jet fighters didn't have the range at that time to keep up with the B-36. And so they thought, what would be really cool? What if we had a little tiny plane, a couple of little tiny planes that we could just launch from the belly of the B-36? And then those would be our little fighters for defense when we need it. And then when we don't need them, then they just, park back up inside the belly of the beast, refuel up there. They'll be fine. We don't need to have these escorts that can fly thousands of miles with us. We'll just carry along our own defenses. And so they designed the XF-85 Goblin Parasite Fighter. Why Goblin? Because apparently, whoever was putting them together at the time really wanted to name them all after mythological creatures. So they had the Phantom and the Banshee and then the Goblin. And here's the magic of this one. And the reason I bring it up for episode 85 is I've seen one. I've been close enough to put my hands on one. I can't remember if I touched it or not. I would think I did because that's the kind of dude I am. No, in fact, I know I did. I've seen one of these things. It's at the Strategic Air and Space Museum in Ashland, Nebraska. All right, so it's a couple hours from my house. And went there on a trip with the scouts, whatever. And they've got one of these suckers on display. They've got a big old B-36 fuselage there with the big opening. And here's how it works, all right? They launch the Goblin fighter from the belly of the B-36, and it goes out and it does its things. It turns out the thing can actually fly pretty well. It was fairly stable. It worked really well. It looks goofy. It's like a giant egg with a jet engine coming out of its butt. But it actually flew and did pretty well. Problem was, it wasn't nearly maneuverable enough to keep up with the enemy fighters that they might be encountering. But more than that is, you know how you land this thing? You don't. It has no landing gear. There's no landing gear. There's no wheels. It's got skids on the bottom in case of emergency. In case you need to go down, you've got some skids on the bottom to slide to a halt and hopefully not die. But no, the way you're supposed to bring this sucker in is you put it back inside the B-36. Well, what does that require? That requires flying up under the B-36, matching speed, and then a hook comes out of the top of your Goblin fighter and latches onto a trapeze bar that hangs above you, hanging from the B-36. And then, once you're hooked on the trapeze bar, they pull you back up into the ship, and you're parked. Turns out, nobody can do that. I think they tried it, and out of 7 attempts at parking it, I think they only managed to get it back inside the boat 3 times. So, not really a viable method for them. And so they wound up scrapping it. And so there's only two of them in existence. Only two of these things. That's the thing, is when I was there in person, looking at it, touching it, seeing this little piece of history, it didn't sink into me. I'm sure the tour guide said something about it, but it never occurred to me that there were only two of them in the world that were ever made and flown. And then they realized how impractical it was, and so they stopped. And so one of them is in Ashland, Nebraska at the Strategic Air and Space Museum, and then the other one I think is at the National Air Force Museum or something. That's what it is. I don't know if I've got the exact right name. And it's just cooler than crap. Honestly, go online, look up XF-85, and I think, I don't know what the X is for, parasite fighter, apparently. That's right, it's a parasite fighter class. So XF-85 Goblin. And just take a look at the pictures of this thing. Unbelievable that someone actually flew in that thing, and someone actually dropped it out of the bottom of a huge bomber, and then latched it back onto a trapeze and brought it back in. At least three times they managed that. Holy crap, it's really cool looking. Goofy, but in a cool way. Kind of like this podcast. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Oh, as always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride Radio smells exactly like the inside of a Mylar comic book bag that's only been used once. But you know what it's time for? It's time for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. The time for me, when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, and this week has been so busy. It really has. I'll get to that in just a minute. I add it to my master list, and the best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record You Lucky Dogs. Okay, did I say busy week? It has been crazy busy, and I'm squeezing this podcast in on Sunday night late, and I hate when I do this because I feel like I'm rushing myself, so I'm trying to take some deep breaths. I don't want to jip you guys out of anything. I don't want to rob you of any of the value you've come to expect from this podcast. So, therefore, I'm going to try and take my time, do this right, but it is a crazy week. This next weekend coming up, and we've got so much going on and so much to prepare for and getting ready for it. My 11-year-old has a camp out that he has to go on. But, oh, geez, there's movie night at the school on Friday night. And then Saturday there's the camp out. But, oh, before the camp out, guess what? We're all going to go out and do scouting for food, where we go around town and we gather up food donations and take them down to the food bank. So we have to do that first. And then we have to go out to camp. But I'm going to go out with him to camp and help him get his tent set up. And then there's another kid that he's going to be camping with while he's there. They've partnered up. But then I have to drive back to town. Why? Oh, yeah, it's Aiden's prom night. And as a junior parent, I am going to be staying all night at the after prom party and being a chaperone, because apparently it's my duty. And so, I said duty. So, I am going to be spending all night locked in the high school for the after prom, the post prom party, which will probably involve a hypnotist, and there may be some other cool stuff going on. I don't know exactly what we're doing this year. I sat in on committee meetings. Do I pay attention? I've kind of lost track of where we've been. But in past years, it's involved a hypnotist. And, of course, there's always games and fabulous prizes. And then at 6 in the morning, I will be released from that duty. I said duty again. And I will drive back out to the camp where I can help Eli get up for breakfast. And then we'll break down camp. Did I forget to mention then that the youngest one, Noah, the next day is the huge blue and gold end of the year Cub Scout Awards banquet ceremony thing. That same day. Oh. So we're going to do all that stuff the day before, and then I'm not going to sleep all night, and then I have to get up and go manage my Cub Scout den for the blue and gold banquet, where I'm going to have to lead them in song. It'll be awesome. We're actually going to sing. I gave them the choice of not that this is relevant, but you know what? It's late and I'm tired and I'm going to ramble. Haver, as it will. I give them the choice between either doing a song called The Beaver Call, which is not as dirty as you're making it out to be, so you just stop that, or the Penguin Song, the Have You Ever Seen a Penguin Go to Sea, which is much longer and sillier, but a lot more fun. But both of them, fun songs, just fun little chant songs that are easy to do and fun to perform. And they voted for the Beaver Song, so that's what we're going to wind up doing. So, you know what, this would actually be more illustrative if I were to actually do the Beaver Song for you. Maybe I'll save that for the post-credits portion of the podcast. But maybe I won't. Maybe I'll forget by then. You never know. You could always request it. I take requests. So, anyway, I've got a lot going on next weekend, and all of that is my long-winded way of explaining that there's probably not going to be a podcast next week, and I'm really sorry about that, but it's not my fault. Clearly, obviously, this was unavoidable. There's nothing I could do. So, I'm going to try, but, that Blue and Gold ceremony also requires that Noah and I bake a cake together, because we do the father-son cake-bake auction thing. And so somewhere in there, I've got to squeeze in time to bake and decorate a cake that reflects scouting values while being musically themed. I don't know if I can do that, but we'll try. Oh, God, I just realized. Oh, God, cassette Sunday next week. Also, my wife will not be with us for half of this because she's obligated to go to a family function down in Lincoln, so she's got to drive with her parents and go take care of that after having stayed up all night at post prom. Then she has to go with her parents because they've got a family thing going on down in Lincoln. And so she won't even be around, which I just realized means that my in-laws won't be around. And every year when they do the cake auction, generally, you know, your own family winds up buying your own cake. And usually my father-in-law is there and he spends a crap ton of money on the cake. I mean, every year he puts in like $100, $120 on each of my kids' cakes. And that's just his way of, he's giving a donation to scouts, which is really, really cool of him. And I appreciate that. But oh, he has to be in Lincoln. He won't be here. I'm going to have to buy my own cake. Darn it. Oh, well, I'll make it work. Anyway, so there's probably not going to be a podcast next week. And I feel really, really bad about it. But that's why, even though it's late tonight, that's why I felt it was really important to do this. You realize, by the way, we're 12 minutes in. I haven't gotten to anything of substance yet. I think I'm sensing the theme of tonight's episode. So we'll see how this rolls. What's first on my master list? Updates! Kyle's book. That's all I wrote down was Kyle's book. I haven't started reading it yet. My wife has it on her Kindle. And when she's done, I'll move it over to my Kindle. We can probably do it in both places at once. They say that you shouldn't be able to, but we probably could. But I'm waiting for her to finish first. And it's getting really good. Apparently, we have all this stuff that we have to be doing. And so she hasn't been able to read it for like the last 3 or 4 days because we've been really busy with all this stuff getting prepared. I mean, this, like I say, next weekend is crazy, but it's all this time of year. It's all building up. And she won't tell me anything about it because I haven't started reading it yet. But it's driving her crazy because, you know, she'll read for, you know, 15, 20 minutes before bed or something like that, and then she can't put it down. She doesn't want to put it away. It's gripping. So if you haven't picked up my brother's books, I'm telling you, my wife's recommendation speaks volumes. She's way smarter than I am. And so therefore, if she's telling you this is a good book, you're going to have to trust her. I haven't read it yet, but I've read the first one, all right? I read The Norn's Quest, and it was awesome. Norn's Quest by Kyle Jones. Go find it on Amazon. You'll love it. And now she's reading Mats Sagnir's Game, also by my brilliant brother, as a sequel to Norn's Quest, and supposedly really, really, really good. So go buy it now, and then read it. Review it. Give him some nice reviews on Amazon. You know, let him know he's doing a good job, because his own brother hasn't read it yet, so he's probably feeling kind of low about that. Although, I'd apologize to him here, but he's not listening to my podcast, so I guess we're kind of even, right, Kyle? And you'll hear this in what is it now, mid-February in 2016? Is that when you're hearing this one? All right, anyway, doesn't make any difference. I am looking forward to reading your book. By the time you hear this, Kyle, I will have read your book, and I will have loved it and written you a nice review on Amazon, and all will be right with the world. So that's updates. Updates. What's it time for now? Oh, it's time for a little feedback. That's right, a little feedback here. First off, and I don't actually have anybody's actual letters in front of me. You would think this would be the point where I would read their private messages or emails or whatever it is they've sent me. But I'm lazy and I'm rambling. So, first, Humongous. Humongous says, so I go to watch Black Mirror on your recommendation, and the first thing I get is somebody porking a pig? Are you serious? Is that what's going on here? And of course he's joshing with me, but it does serve to remind us that Black Mirror is awesome, honestly. And I've only watched the first season, so three episodes. Isn't that weird to say? Because British TV can do that. That, you know, three episodes, a full season of Sherlock is three episodes that are each feature length film length and quality. I mean, it's like an hour and 45, 2 hours worth of Sherlock for an episode, and they're all brilliant. All right. Well, Black Mirror is running on that same schedule, three episodes per season, and the first season is just killer. So if you haven't started watching it, take my recommendation, Humongous's recommendation, and even my brother Kyle, his recommendation, because he also commented on that thread, and really good show. But my other feedback is from Nelly. All right. And hi, Nelly. I'm glad to know you're listening, and I know you're only up to like episode 77 now. She's getting caught up again. She's been kind of busy. Just got married recently. Congratulations, Nelly. Nelly used to be Flip, for those of you who have heard me mention her before. So way back when we had the Animal Cast, back during the Animal Ball days when my brother and I had a previous podcast before this one, Flip was one of our listeners then, and she has followed me through to Nerd Pride and is now going by the name Nelly, which I assume is her real name. I'm pretty sure, but that's irrelevant. But Nelly and I have been corresponding. She's been sending me all sorts of long letters as she gets caught up on the podcast, and it's been very heartwarming. Thank you. I really appreciate that because I know that there's every listener that I know of, every listener that I know by name, and I start getting correspondence from them. I see them on the boards. They send me Podomatics, all that stuff. I know that for every one of those people, I know that there's another 10 or so of you out there that I don't know. And so it's nice to hear the ones I do hear from. And the rest of you, honestly, throw me a line. Toss me a Podomatics, something. I love hearing from you guys. And right now, we've got a small enough listener base that you're getting in on ground floor. If you send me anything, I'll probably mention it here. I don't know if that kind of really, really vague, nebulous sort of recognition and fame is worth anything to you. But, you know, hey, it's one of the perks of talking to me is I'll probably talk about it here on the podcast. I'm desperate for material. So, I had a joke that went in there, but it just didn't work out. I'm going to let it slide, and we're just going to move on. We'll go right back to Nelly. She's been talking with me. We've been talking about the feminism episodes that I've done, and talking a little bit about trans issues, because I'm going to kind of cover that coming up. But trans is a weird one. Not that trans is weird itself, but that for me, I feel so uneducated on trans issues, transgender stuff, that I feel so completely out of my element in being able to talk about it, because I feel like anything I say is going to sound pretty ignorant. I've barely touched. I've had the one episode a while back where I talked about they had a trans character in one of the new Pathfinder books, that one of their iconic characters, the shaman, was a trans character. And I mentioned in talking about that, I mentioned how alien that seemed to me, that it was just something I wasn't used to, and mentioned how difficult I thought it might be to play a character like that, that I didn't know if I had the right machinery within me to do that. And the more I've learned, because that seeing that character and it, I don't know, I've been more aware of my own ignorance, and I've been kind of listening and following along. trying to gather new information, tuning into new sources, and I don't know. It's sparked something in me. I almost regret having said that I don't think I could play a trans character. I don't think I could relate to some, because the more I read, the more I see, the more I realize that, oh, well, I was just being stupid. All right. And it's getting, you know what? I don't want to get too deep into this. Like I say, right now I'm in listening mode on it. I'm just absorbing information because I recognize that I don't know a lot. I'm a guy that, like, I first learned the word cisgender, 3-4 months ago, when I was talking to the feminist bees, because I talked about the orcs and feminism and gender issues in gaming, race issues in gaming. And when I talked about orcs in particular, and I quoted some stuff from feminist bees, that was the first time I heard the term cisgender, and it was brand new to me. And I realized that there's a lot of, I don't know, ignorance about the term out there right now. When I hear it brought up, I mean, just from my kids or my kids' friends, their only experience with the term cisgender, by the way. All right, here's, darn it, I wasn't going to get all the way into it. I'm still talking about Nelly. I will remember to back up to that. But now that I've brought it up, I suppose I need to do a little bit of education. This is my very rudimentary understanding of it. But cisgendered would be, sort of the opposite of transgendered. If you are transgendered, you feel that your gender does not align with your biological gender. That is really not even a full encapsulation of the issue. All right. That's just a quick overview. That's just a slice of it. But assuming cisgendered simply means that you are a person the gender that you feel you are, your awareness, your perception of your own gender matches the biological gender you were born with, and thus you are cisgendered. And so the attitude I'm getting from other people who have now experienced this term, and I'm probably the last one to figure out what cisgendered is, because other people are now referencing it, and I'm realizing, God, I'm way behind the curve on this. The attitude I'm getting is people will say something about cisgendered as just the term cisgendered and how they feel it's stupid and why are we putting a label on this, and people who use that term are being categorized as some kind of extremists who are, you know, who hate cisgendered people, who hate, it's misinformed and it's silly. And so the education here, because I had to explain this to one of my son's friends who brought it up and was apparently got it from Reddit or something like that. It was going on about what an odd term it was and how stupid it was and that the people that are using this are some kind of extremist people. I'm like, no. Just maybe you've run into an extremist. Maybe you have, because there's lots of stupid people on every side of every issue. But the need for the term cisgendered is because if you didn't have it, then what do you call someone who is not transgendered? If you have transgender, what do you call someone who's not trans? Normal? Well, see, that's insulting, because that implies that someone who's not how you are is somehow not normal. Not the impression we want to be given, right? Okay. And I tried to make that, I'm not doing this justice. This is something I wanted to research more, and I want to actually have prepared speeches. I'm just going off the top of my head, so I'm sorry if this is disjointed, but the comparison I made would be, for the longest time, if you were gay, you know, yes, right now we have the dichotomy, the two ends of the spectrum, gay, straight, and obviously it's a spectrum. There's lots of gray areas in between. But once upon a time, in my lifetime, when I was a kid, yeah, you could be gay or you could just be normal. I mean, normal was the opposite of gay, implying that if you were gay, then there's something obviously wrong with you. All right. It's not just a different way of being. It is a wrong way of being because it's not normal. And so cisgendered is the equivalent of straight for trans issues. All right. And so anyway, enough of that. I gotta get back to my Nelly conversation because that's where this all started. 25 minutes in. I've barely even started the podcast. This is great. We may not even have any Podomatics today. I'm just going to keep rambling forever. I got a whole agenda full of stuff here, people. Honestly, my master list is packed. In fact, I was really hoping to get to some cleanup at the end of this, because there's a bunch of stuff I could probably cross off with like 2-3 minutes worth of talk. I don't think we're going to have time. Anyway, here's the deal. The reason I brought up Nellie in the first place is that Nellie, like I say, she just got married. And interestingly enough, her new husband is someone who works for Gen Con. Wow, that feels really big and important in my head. I don't know if it really is. I mean, there's lots of people who work for Gen Con. And the title of event program manager, event planning manager. I don't remember what his exact title is. But anyway, it sounds important from this end of the table. So I thought that was really, really cool that not only has she been a longtime listener of mine, but her husband is directly involved in Gen Con. That just seems really cool to me. So she said something about, hey, we're going to be at Gen Con anyway, which I thought, oh yeah, duh, of course they are. And she said, you want to meet? And I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm going to be there with my son. I'm going to be there with Eliahad and DM Darks from my website. Eliahad, who I've only met one time in the past, and Darks, I've never met in person. It's going to be awesome. And we're all going to be hanging out. Now, I've got a chance to meet another listener and her new husband, and they both seem really, really cool. This is great. So, anyone who's going to be at Gen Con, I don't know how many of you are, but anyone who's going to be at Gen Con, come to my forums. Send me a message. We'll find a way to hook up. We'll find a way to meet. Even if it's just for, 2 minutes to say hi and how cool to put a face to a name. That's all we might need. Or, if we get a chance to hang out, I don't know what's going to be going on. It's going to be kind of cool, though. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to have a great time. I can't wait for Gen Con. And as far as the rest of Nellie's letter, again, she sent me a whole bunch of links about feminist stuff. And like I say, I brought up the trans topic and how I'm kind of working on that. And I don't want this to be an activist podcast where that seems to be my focus. But I think I'm pretty widespread on my topics. And feminism and equality and gay rights. And there's all sorts of stuff out there that's super important to me. And I'm going to keep coming back to them because they matter. In fact, my next topic, we're just going to bleed into this, but it's going to be a continuation of the same topic. My next topic is a nerd culture report. Go on, Gonzo, go.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you're very, very close. Okay, having gotten that out of the way, it's playtime. And when I say playtime, I mean the actual play that my son's school just put on and that he was a part of. We told you that Aiden was going to be in the play. We told you he was going to be the big bad wolf. And he was in the play, and he was the big bad wolf. And it was great. Holy crow. All right, they put on Shrek the Musical. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. This production it was ambitious. The play director is new. She's been the assistant play director for a while, and now she's taken over as play director. And her son, who has been in the plays before, and he's, I don't know, how old is he now? 23-ish? I don't know. Something like that. But her son loves the theater, and he's really good at what he does. He's directed some community theater, and so he's gotten in to help her with her first year of the play. And they were ambitious and made it huge. And so Shrek the Musical is big, because first, you have to get the rights from the Shrek the Musical people, and I don't know who's in charge of that, but man, they are really picky about how you do it. You're not allowed to change wordings. You're not allowed to improvise stuff. There's all sorts of restrictions on it. But they put together a dragon. They had an actual dragon-sized dragon on stage at a high school production, and the dragon was a puppet run by 3 different people, and it was huge and glorious, and she was great. And the gal that they had singing the voice for, 13 or 14, this gal, and her voice was amazing. Beautiful. They had an all-new sound system with microphones, and they had this elaborate costuming and all this great stuff, and it was a great, great play. And there were problems. The first night, we went to both performances, and the first night, the sound was off. They just couldn't get the levels right, so the music was way too loud for a lot of it, and it felt kind of blaring and screechy at parts. And then there were some parts where some of the mics were either broken or they weren't placed right, and so you couldn't hear people. And but it was mostly sound issues. That was really the big issue that first night. I mean, there was a couple of little things that happened in any play production. There were a couple of missed cues, and then you got a laugh out of that and this kind of stuff. But then the second night, man, they pulled it together, and it was dead on. It was really good. For a high school production, I was very proud of them. That was spectacular. And the only sad part is that Sarah Beth had asked, hey, if there's any way that we can, you know, if you can post any portion of this online, that would be awesome. We'd love to see it. And at the time, I said, hey, heck yeah, of course we will. Turns out we're not allowed to. The Shrek people are not letting anyone videotape and not letting anyone publish any portion of this videotaped production. And so, therefore, what's going to happen is they did video it. They gave permission for one camera to be set up, and so we have an actual professional videotape of it. And the school, I assume that they're only allowed to have that one taping, and then they can sell copies of it, because I assume a portion of every tape sold has to go back to the Shrek people. I assume that's how they set it up, which is just bizarre to my mind that they're going to make chump change off of some itty bitty high school production. But you know what? They want to protect their copyright. That's their business. And the school has chosen to sell it at the lowest possible price because they just want people to have a copy of the tape. So, I mean, we're going to pick up a copy of it for $5. And I say videotape as if it's actually going to be a video cassette. I'm assuming we're going to get DVDs. But anyway, that's what we're doing. So, we're looking forward to that, but we can't publish that. But here's my concern. All right. Leave all that aside. Like I say, awesome play production. Great. I had a good time. The Shrek people are weird. Okay, that's great. But before I saw any of it, all I knew was that my son was going to be in it, and he was going to be playing a cross-dressing wolf. He was playing the big bad wolf, and he's wearing a grandmother's nightgown, his own grandmother's nightgown that he borrowed for purposes of this play. So he'll be a wolf in a nightgown. In fact, I think the original script called for him to be in racy lingerie beneath the nightgown. But apparently someone stole the lingerie. Who would do that? Who would steal wolf-sized underwear from backstage? Anyway, who knows? But I asked him beforehand, I said, so, dude, okay, you're going to go in there as a cross-dressing wolf. And you're going to play this up a little bit. I said, is your character, is your performance, the way it's scripted in this play, is it respectful? He's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, is it respectful of trans people and trans issues? I mean, even if it's, you know, whether it's transvestite, transgender, trans, I mean, you know, we're not going for the just standard joke of, oh, look, it's a woman or a man in a dress, and a man in a dress is inherently funny. Because that's a very old trope, is that, hey, if you put a man in a dress, that's automatically funny, regardless of context or what else is going on. Man in a dress is funny. It's an old bit. And so I'm like, it's not just that, is it? I mean, that's not what we're looking at. I mean, this is, and he's, no, trust me. It's very respectful. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And then I saw it, and apparently, the story of Shrek the musical comes with a much stronger message than the movie Shrek, which was kind of cool. I mean, yes, the movie Shrek had its message, but it was also mostly about Mike Myers hamming it up and making jokes. But the musical, and those of you who have seen the musical know exactly what I'm talking about already. I've never seen it before. This was new to me. The musical, the whole point of it is by the end, we all learn a lesson that, hey, we're all freaks. Everybody here is a freak of some sort. That's the whole point of it. And that's what makes us special. That's what makes us awesome. And it's a great touchy-feely happy ending. Excuse me, Matt. Sorry, something in my throat. But I was actually very surprised that it was, yeah, it was a powerful message by the end that even the first night I was watching it when they had all the sound issues and all this, the story came through because it's a decently written story and I had a great time and it, I approve of that. I approve of the direction it took all this and it always gets me to thinking about, yeah, you know what? Sometimes I kind of drift away from that on this podcast, but that is really why I started all this. The whole point of being a home for, a place for nerds, people who are different. And actually, we're not all that different because we all have a lot in common. But, and again, I don't want to sound sappy or overly play this or anything, but the whole idea of, you know, doing what you love, being joyous about things, being having fun with stuff, and just being comfortable with who you are. That's anyway, I feel weird when I keep going on about stuff like that. But that's the message I was getting from this play. And sappy as it may seem, and, you know, very stereotypically, you know, kids cartoon happy ending sort of thing. But it was nice. It was sweet. I enjoyed the crap out of it. Had a good time. So anyway, I'm sure I will get back to topics like this all the time because it's what I do. But I have done way too much on all that. Let's get into, where is it? I just did Nerd Culture Report. So, oh, it's the Science Corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. All right. So, I follow Vihart on Twitter and on YouTube. I love Vihart. She is awesome. And if you're not following Vihart and you consider yourself a nerd, you need to start because she's great. And I just saw on Twitter, just saw a quote from her on her Twitter feed where Vi says, and hold on, let me scroll this down so I can see all of this at once. There we go. Vi says, quote, upon finally reaching Ceres and Pluto, the scientific community has reclassified them as, and this is all capitalized, so it's all a single important title, has reclassified them as planets that are very small but still planets. That's the full official name. Planets that are very small but still planets. All right. Anyway, end quote, even though I interject all sorts of my own material in the middle of that. That was still her quote. And that's brilliant, because that's the impression that we're getting, is that as the media is finally getting hold of some of this stuff, because we have got I already talked about both of these, that we've gone to Ceres. We've got a satellite, an orbiter in orbit around Ceres in the asteroid belt, getting us photographs. This is spectacular. I mean, this is just unprecedented. It's awesome and amazing. All right. And Ceres is a planet, by God. It's a dwarf planet, but it's a planet. And then we've got the New Horizons, that is headed to Pluto. Like I told you, I don't know, 3 months left, 3 months before it gets into orbit. I cannot wait. I check about every 2 or 3 days. I go out and check NASA's website. I check the news feeds. I'm looking for any pictures of Pluto bigger than 4 or 5 pixels because they're coming and they're coming soon. And I just can't wait. I want to see it. I'm just so excited about this. We're going to put something. You know, and I don't think we're going in an orbit around Pluto. I think we're just doing a really close flyby. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, 3 months from now, we're going to be almost on top of that planet, and it is a planet. And so, as these two missions in particular are heating up, and we're getting more of this, more information about these dwarf planets, Vi has hit it dead on with this, is that the news media, the scientific community, as they're talking about them, they keep referring to them as planets. All right. I know they said, oh, we don't classify Pluto as a planet anymore. Technically, it's a dwarf planet, which is somehow not really a planet, even though we call it a dwarf planet and it has planet right in the name. It's not really a planet. Oh, but guess what? Their tune is changing now that they're getting lots and lots of attention because we're going to Pluto. Well, suddenly, Pluto's a planet. I mean, it's small, but definitely still a planet. A little planet, but definitely a planet. Oh, yeah, we call it a dwarf planet, but definitely still a planet. I love this shift because this is exactly why. You go back and listen to it. I have a episode about this early on. I wish I had looked up which number it was, where I said, is Pluto a planet? Of course it's still a planet. Because our choice is, we either have 8 planets. We have 4 terrestrial planets, 4 gas giants, and then, a bunch of other junk in our solar system that isn't planets. Or is it much more exciting to tell kids, we have 50 planets in our solar system and we're still looking for more? That's what's exciting. And that's how you get people fired up about science. That's how you get people fired up about space exploration and about physics and what we're doing here. You get them fired up by telling them, we've sent rockets to other planets, people. Not just Mars, not just Venus. We crashed stuff into Mercury and Jupiter. We are sending stuff to comets. We are sending stuff to planets. We're gonna go around Pluto. We're going around Ceres. We're exploring everywhere. And by calling them planets, you make them more exciting and you get people drawn in on that. And that is what the media and the scientific community are all keying into right now, is that they're getting more attention when they keep referring to Ceres as a planet, when they keep referring to Pluto as a planet. Oh, a dwarf planet, but a planet. And Vi hit it on the head, and I think it's exciting and awesome. It's the way it should be. It's great. It's really spectacular. It's good to see people fired up about this sort of stuff. Like I say, the stuff from Ceres, I didn't even realize. I've been following this for how long, and it keeps saying that Dawn went to Vesta and then to Ceres. And I kept seeing that it went to Vesta, but I know Vesta is in the asteroid belt, and therefore it's not Ceres, so it's not a planet. But it finally occurred to me today, okay, well, what is Vesta that it was big enough and important enough that we went to it to see what it was like? And it turns out Vesta is what they're calling a protoplanet, because you got to have planet in the name to make it more exciting. Vesta clearly is not a planet. I will give it that. But okay, I'll give it protoplanet. That's fine. This is a rock that is 300 plus miles across. It is a big rock. All right. But unlike a planet, which is so beautifully round and shaped, Vesta is clearly a giant rock. And it looks for all the world like a giant rock. It's not a planet. It's not shaped and rounded. Its gravity hasn't yet crushed it into uniformity with everybody else. But it's a big-ass rock. All right? And Vesta is cool-looking. A protoplanet. All right. You know what? Protoplanet is something that's barely even entered my lexicon before today. And I like it. All right? So anyway, to sum up, get excited about planets and space. Remember that dwarf planets are still planets, and you need to consider them as such, right? You feel free to refer to dwarf planets as planets anytime you want, all right? You have my permission, all right? And also, follow ViHeart, all right? Go to YouTube and look up ViHeart on YouTube and subscribe. Go to Twitter, follow her there. She's awesome. She's dead on. I love everything she puts out because she's usually pretty darn right. And also, lots of fun. If you need to make a point, or if you need to explain something to somebody, she does it beautifully. And it's simple to just share it and push the link along. And she can educate other people the same way she's educated me and you. And it's cool. But you know what? Enough of science. As if we could ever have enough science. Instead, we're going to move to, oh my gosh, I guess we're not. Wow, I'm almost at 45 minutes. Do I go to my gaming table? Or would I move on to some Podomatic? I'll leave it up to you guys. What do you think? You want to hear the gaming table? Or should I put it off to next week? All right, we'll do the gaming table. All right, you win. You win. You know what? It's my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, card games, it fits on my gaming table. I am here to share it with you. It's not even a long gaming table, although the way tonight's going, I'll make it really long. I have a problem with morality in Pathfinder. I have a really tough time. Not a really tough time. Because I'm having a great time and I'm making it work and it's fine. All right, but here's the conflict that just gives me this little twinge of, I'm probably not doing everything completely right, but I'm going to keep doing it. My twinge is, when it comes to loot, when it comes to getting stuff, Pathfinder is a game, a role-playing game, a Dungeons & Dragons-like role-playing game, in which the base world for it has a very modern sensibility. All right, our morals and ethics when we're playing Pathfinder are very similar to modern-day 21st century morals and ethics. All right, and it's in such a way that even though the world doesn't have the technology of our modern world, well, they have magic, and the magic makes up for a lot of the technology. And so you wind up being, even though it's technically a medieval level of technology with swords and this sort of stuff, swords, that's the only word I need to come up with to exemplify all of technology. But to say it's a medieval level of technology completely discounts the fact that, yeah, sure, it's medieval technology technically, but you also have magic, and magic can fulfill all of these roles. And, you know, you play a character who can use even basic magic, and you come to learn all of this, that you know, you can have magic that does lots and lots of amazing things. The fact that you can cure all disease. I mean, magic in Pathfinder and Dungeons & Dragons kicks ass all over modern medicine, because we can cure almost anything. In Pathfinder, we can heal from almost anything almost instantly. All right, we can restore limbs. We can bring people back from the dead. We can cure any disease, remove curses. You didn't even know removing a curse was a problem you should have to deal with. All right, and medicine is just one example. All right, there's all sorts of ways that Pathfinder, that world, that they're functional technology level, once you include magic, is actually on par with, or sometimes higher, sometimes lower, than modern day. And so therefore, the morals of that world are very modern sensibility. All right, that was way too long a way to explain all of that. So what happens then is, when it comes upon loot, sometimes it feels a little weird that, like, okay, we just finished up at the sawmill, and... spoilers if you're going to be playing Rise of the Rune Lords. Maybe you don't want to listen in. I don't know if I'm giving anything away. But we finished up at the sawmill, and we've beaten some fairly important bad guys in the process. And so we've got the city guard is there, and they're hauling away the bad guys and helping us clean up, and these people are going to be arrested and charged, and things are going to happen to them. And then in the meantime, while they're being hauled away, we also feel completely comfortable going around and looting the place and keeping for ourselves anything we find because, well, they were the bad guys and we've defeated them in fair combat. Therefore, we're entitled to all their stuff. All right? And in Dungeons & Dragons in Pathfinder, that is a perfectly logical course of action. Apparently, somehow, and I don't know if they've worked into their legal code, but apparently, if you catch somebody doing something bad and you defeat them in combat, you're allowed to take all their stuff. That's just the way the world works. But it feels weird. And so I haven't quite figured out what to do with it because it just seems... Because the time that we actually tried playing this out, when we tried giving the goblins all their stuff back, we did give the goblins all their stuff back. And then proceeded to set up a trust for them and then failed to really follow up with them much at all. But you know what? We'll get back there. We've only left town for a couple of weeks. We'll be back. But... We cleared this place out, and here's all this loot that at the time was an important amount of money for us. And we decided, you know what, it would be wrong for us to keep this. It doesn't belong to us. It rightfully belongs to the goblins who, now, if we had played through the module as I'm assuming most people did, you would have just wound up kicking butt all over the goblins. And, you know, you would have wiped them out along with the bad guys, and then you would have taken all the stuff, and it would have been fine. But we didn't do that. We actually made peace with one of the goblin factions, and he wound up helping us out. And so once we essentially coming in like you know, the British and Americans over the last 60, 80 years where we've removed the people from power that we didn't like, and then we put in our own puppet government, and now we're here to support them and all this. And it felt wrong to just walk away with all the goblin loot because, well, you know, they helped us. They're here, and technically, yeah, we deposed their leader, but it's still their stuff, and so we gave it all back to them. Well, that meant we were a lot poorer than we really wanted to be. And as much as I try and deny it, you know, you gotta remember that, yeah, Pathfinder and in Dungeons & Dragons rely on you making a good bit of cash to keep up appearances, to keep advancing your equipment, your stuff, as your character advances. You need bigger, more powerful things, just the way the world works, all right? And the best way to get those is defeat stuff, acquire treasure. That's just how it happens, but it feels weird. And so, like I say, I've been playing lately, and I'm just having this twinge of especially this last one, where we're looting stuff off of, yeah, they were bad guys. They were evil, evil dudes, and they deserve to go away or die or whatever happens to them. That's great. But it does feel weird that we're just taking their stuff. I mean, I don't know. Did they have families that should be inheriting all this stuff? Did they have, I mean, I don't want to bring it up to, Pat, if you're listening, pretend I didn't say any of this. I don't want to give him any ideas. My dungeon master has enough evil ideas on his own. You know, to have somebody come challenge us in court because we defeated Daddy and took all of his stuff, and now he's got starving children at home who feel that they're entitled to have their treasure back. But it just feels weird. So, again, I don't know where I'm going to go with that because I'm just about to the level where I can go buy myself a handy haversack. And if you've never played Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder, then a handy haversack means nothing to you. But if you have played, you understand exactly how exciting this is for me to finally have something to pull all my junk in. Oh, this is great. So, anyway, that's what I got for my gaming table. Maybe I'll delve into that further in the future. Who knows? But, again, just something weird. Just been kind of irking me. Do I have anything else? Now, you know what? Like I say, I was going to do some cleanup today, but there is no way. So you are saved from me singing the Barney song. And we'll move straight into the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. Holy blueberries and sweet sassy molasses. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums. I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And our first number tonight, 96. Oh, sweet. All right, hold on. Let me get my table up. And while I'm looking this up, let me just warn you that, like I said, we're so far into this cast, and it's kind of late anyway. I may wind up not doing a whole lot of Pod-O-Matics tonight, which is probably for the best, because same as last week, same as the week before, we're running out, people. So, again, we're just barely keeping our head above water. I think we've got 108 Pod-O-Matics available, so no blank spaces yet on our chart. But, oh, it's getting close. So, those of you who've never sent me a Pod-O-Matic, those of you who have, send me some. Give me a short list. Give me a long list. Give me anything. If you got just one question, I got one guy who just keeps sending me one question at a time. I love that. All right? You want to give me a list of 20? That's fine. But I could use some Pod-O-Matics, as always. So, this is my weekly reminder that, you know, please give. Okay. Anyway, 96. I said as I was looking it up, and I didn't bother to look for anything until I got done talking. That's how self-absorbed I am. 96 is from Billy Bob. Sweet. Hey, Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, you ever watch a bad movie, and you know it's a bad movie, but it's obvious that the people making it thought they were making a brilliant piece of art? I love movies like that. You ever seen Tommy Wiseau's The Room? Oh, man, have I ever seen Tommy Wiseau's The Room? No, I haven't. I've heard all sorts of stuff about it on the internet. I've heard all sorts of wonderful things about how this movie is so bad that it's good, how entertaining it is, how the whole legend, not even legend, the true story of how this thing went from being a dismal failure of a movie that almost passed out of existence, and yet something turned into this cult classic, and people are obsessed with it and obsessed with its badness and watching it as groups. And even the writer, director, star, Tommy Wiseau, whose name I have no idea if I'm pronouncing correctly, even the star has embraced it, its campy, kitschy, whatever place it has now taken in the pantheon of bad movies. And he's kind of embraced that grudgingly at first, but now, you know, hey, you know what? He's making his money back. So, you know, you can't argue completely with that. Hold on. Ah, water. Oh, that's, don't drink that very often. So I have not seen The Room, but I know a lot about it. But what you're asking about is a really bad movie that when it was being made, the people making it, or in the case of The Room, the one person making it, I'm imagining most of the people around him realized he was out of his mind. But Tommy Wiseau thought for sure he was making a masterpiece, and he put everything he had into it, from what I hear. And yeah, and that sort of sincerity, in theory, makes for some spectacular movies. The idea that that they didn't do well, but you know that they had every intention. You know that they put all of their heart and soul into it. But, you know, for comparison, there's things like Plan 9 from Outer Space, right? Anything by Ed Wood. I've only seen maybe two Ed Wood movies. And those are touted as so bad they're good, and how Ed Wood was very passionate about his filmmaking, but he cut a lot of corners and it was really hard. Anyway, I didn't like Plan 9 from Outer Space. I mean, not just because it was a bad movie, but because it wasn't even so bad it was good. It was just bad. It was painful to watch. Horrifyingly painful to watch. And so, you know, Ed Wood, who had all of the best intentions and put all of himself into his movies and really truly wanted to make stuff that was game changing. And he came up with crap. And so I'm trying to think, I know that there are movies out there. I know there are movies that I've seen where I watched it and thought, yeah, but look at them, look at what they're doing. But most of those, I find enough redeeming qualities that they're recommends for me. You know, the kind of thing that, okay, yeah, they didn't do perfect at the end. But it wasn't a bad movie either. I mean, you see what they were going for. Although, I don't know if this one qualifies. Stink of Flesh. I haven't talked about Stink of Flesh in a long time. Stink of Flesh was a movie written and directed by a man named Scott Phillips, who, speaking of the Animal Cast, my brother and I interviewed Scott Phillips and talked to him specifically about this movie and then his next movie. And Stink of Flesh was just fascinating. It's a zombie film. It's an amateurish zombie film done by Scott Phillips and his friends. But it hit on some themes that to me were fascinating. All right. It, like I said, and it wasn't a great movie. It just wasn't. So Scott Phillips, if you're a huge fan of mine and you're still listening after all this time, obviously you heard the one episode you were in of Animal Cast and you've been following me in my career ever since. I completely get it. You know, I apologize. It wasn't a great film, but it had so much interesting stuff in it that I want to keep seeing what you do. And I think it was worth watching and I recommend it to people to watch it, even though it's flawed. But here's the bit with Stink of Flesh. It's a zombie movie that, to me, I'm watching this movie, and it is, you've got this guy, Matul. Matul, who, for no reason I can discern, there's one reason. I'll get to that in a minute. Matul battles zombies, and he kills zombies with a big hammer and nails. I mean, literally, he kills zombies by hammering giant nails into their foreheads to kill them. A process that gets you really, really close to the zombies and their gnashing teeth, and tends to get lots and lots of zombie gore directly on you when you do it. It seems like a bad choice. But I did figure out eventually that Matul does this because it's really badass. That seems to be the primary motivator for Matul. But in this world, he hooks up with a group who it seems to be run by this dominatrix woman. She terms herself as a dominatrix. And so that's kind of an odd sexual balance in this house of survivors. It's post-zombie apocalypse. So zombies are out there. Human survivors are few and far between, living in a Mad Max-style world. And as I watched Stink of Flesh, the thing that really hooked me about it was the statement it seemed to be making to me about power and exploitation, and because every relationship in this movie, every single one of them, is defined by who has power over who. All right, who can exploit who? Who has control? All right, and that every relationship in the movie, every single one of them was defined by those terms. You know, from the dominatrix, who, I mean, she's specifically set up as a dominatrix, okay? That's her whole role, is to be the one who plays the dominant and plays, and she does so within this house and sets up the rules for other people and tells them how to control and manage others when those encounters happen. There is, and one of the guys who lives with her, I think her primary boyfriend, I think. It's been a long time since I've seen it. But, all right, and this is where I'm now getting into spoiler territory. So if you actually want to watch Stink of Flesh, and I saw it when it was streaming on Netflix, which it's not anymore, you would have to actually get the discs. You're probably not going to do that. But if you have the urge to see Stink of Flesh, I would say skip ahead about 2 minutes from right now and avoid the spoilers. But one of the dudes, and like I say, I think it's her actual boyfriend or primary boyfriend, whoever the lead male is, but he is subservient to her in this house. But then he sneaks away and he goes out to the shed where he apparently keeps a zombie chained up in the shed that nobody else knows about. A zombie that was once a very beautiful young woman. And now he keeps chained and naked in the shed so he can go out and have sex with her to get away from his dominatrix girlfriend. And to me, it was freaky. It was disturbing. It was wrong. But there was something about the statement of that, you know, in the house, she has the power and you can see him chafing at that and his way of expressing his rebellion and his way of getting out of that is, well, he's got to have someone of his own to dominate. And who? A zombie. And it's really, really disturbing because you know zombies are mindless. You know they are, all right? There's no human being left in that. It's nothing but a shell of an undead body. And yet, you feel really bad for this zombie. Really bad for this zombie. It's just, it's grotesque. All right. So here I see this movie that's not a great movie, all right? The motivations, like, again, Matul, played by a guy named Curly, by the way. Curly Tlapal, I can't remember his last name. It's very long and complicated. Curly's a stunt coordinator who's done lots of work since then, before then and since then. He's a stunt coordinator, fight coordinator, stunt man. And he played Matul in Stink of Flesh. And again, Curly's motivation is just, oh, yeah, he's out hammering nails into zombie heads just because it's a cool thing to do on film. Obviously, they were sitting around going, oh, you know what would be badass? Oh, yeah, let's make him do that. And is there a good reason for it? No, they just liked it because it was badass. So that's you know, more than a bit of a flaw in this film. Throughout the film, they keep referring to fast zombies. I've heard that there's a new strain of zombies. And so they keep referring to fast zombies out there. And by the end of the movie, that never materializes. Nothing happens as a result of the fast zombies. All right, almost like maybe they were setting us up for a sequel, but no, it was just this thread left hanging there for no good reason. So the story kind of falls apart. It's just not, obviously not perfect. But this theme, even though it's a bad movie, this theme, I could tell, I mean, they were sincerely working to make a good movie here. They were working really hard at it. So to get back to Billy Bob's question. And that made me like it. I loved it because of that, because of the sincerity I saw. And they wanted to make a good film. And so when I got a chance to interview Scott Phillips and talk to him about all this, I mean, here's the guy who wrote this, directed it. This is exciting. And so I brought that up to him. I brought up the theme that I saw of power, control, exploitation, you know, dominant versus submissive, and how I saw this theme reflected in all of the relationships within the film. And his response when I brought it up was, it was almost dismissive. He gives a little bit of a laugh and says something, and I can't remember his exact words, but something along the line of, oh, well, I guess if you want to look at it that way, I suppose. It was like, it had never occurred to him. All right, here I saw all of this that was poured into this script, that even in this very flawed script in a very flawed movie, but I saw all of this meaning that had been poured into the script, and when I bring it up to him as the writer, yeah, no, he didn't mean any of that. It wasn't, I mean, not to say that it couldn't have been there, and I don't want to be one of these guys where I believe in the psychic, and then when the psychic tells me that, no, it's just a fake, I've been playing a trick on you, there's no real psychic powers here, I lied to you. And then I go, no, you're really psychic. I know you think it, but no, the power flows through you. I don't want to be one of those people where, you know, I saw deep meaning in this flawed script. And then when he tells me, yeah, no, whatever. I don't want to be the guy who says, well, yeah, I know he didn't mean to, but on a subconscious level, that must have been what was coming out. But I think there might have been some of that. I mean, look, he's a writer. Writers have their own themes and their own favorite stuff, and that's how he analyzed stuff, and that's what he put onto the page. It was just, all right, hold on. I had a point here. Darn it. I was going somewhere with this thought. I don't know. It's kind of along the lines of the original question is about movies that, yes, they're bad movies, but because of the sincerity of the people creating them, there's some power to it, something that makes it really awesome, despite it being a bad movie. And I guess my point is, yeah, I suppose so. Yes. And Stink of Flesh is the one example I can think of. I know there's got to be dozens of others that I've seen that I could put in this category. I need to put this on the boards if I remember it later, because this is a great topic. But also, there's also that possibility of, yeah, you know what? You don't know what was in their heart when they were putting this movie together. You don't know what they were thinking when they were making this film. Because, yeah, again, I saw really deep meaning in Stink of Flesh, and I still think there's some there, but from his point of view, you could tell, and maybe he was just being modest, but you could tell that it was a, yeah, no, look, you know, he thinks he's a halfway decent writer, but mostly it was just him and his friends putting together what they thought would be a really cool idea for a movie. All right, they wanted to put together a cool zombie movie, so they came up with a bunch of scenes that, you know, hey, you know what would be really cool? A guy who hammers nails into zombie heads. Oh, God, you know what would be really freaky? What if he kept a zombie chained up out in the shed? Oh, you know what would be really weird? And it was just them, you know, for all I know, it was just them putting together a bunch of random scenes and making it into a semi-coherent story, and I just read way too much into it. Maybe that's the case. So I'm answering this question in two different ways, and you know what, I should really just roll again. But yeah, I get exactly what you're saying. Just don't read too much into it. Did I make a point? Maybe. It is late and I am tired. God, this should really even just be the last question right here. Two. That's what we get. Two Podomatics, and that will still leave me a little bit into the black for next week. I mean, that would probably be nice, right? This is 49. 49. And for what it's worth, I mean, I gave, what, a 20-minute answer on that first one? I mean, that's a full subject in itself. That's a whole segment on my show. That is... Here I am justifying being lazy and going to bed early. Ha ha, take that, people. 49 is where I was. Zimny says, what animal has the coolest group name? I assume he's talking in scientific, the scientific names of animals. And the coolest group name, the first one I always think of is Pongo. Pongo for... orangutans. But Pongo is not really that cool. It's just a lot of fun, which is like orangutans themselves. Pan for chimpanzees. Pan is not bad. But I think if I have to pick the coolest group name for animals... Oh, wait, you're not thinking of that at all. I'm thinking of you know, groups as in families and subfamilies and genus and species and all this. You're not thinking of that. No, you're thinking group names as in a pack of wolves, a herd of cows, a flock of sheep. What is the coolest group name? Okay. Now that I realize what question you're asking. Oh, by the way, if it was back to the other one, it just occurred to me. Raccoons, Procyon. Procyon loader. That is a great scientific name. But that's not the question you're asking. No. The question you're asking is the coolest name for a group of animals. And if I believed in that crap, I would tell you it's a parliament of owls. All right? I love the term parliament of owls. I think that's pretty cool. Although Pride of Lions is not bad either. But here's the problem I have with group names for animals, is I think most of them are recent inventions that are all crap. I can't prove that, but I could. I could go out and look all of these up and start compiling some information about it, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to go with my gut. My gut here is, yes, we have always had herd, flock, pride. There's some of these that have been around for centuries, all right, and that those are the actual terms of them. But, for example, a flamboyance of flamingos. That's something that was invented in the last 20 years, and I'm being generous by giving it 20, okay? It's something that someone made up because, well, if we have to have group names for all these different animals, what would be fun? And Parliament of Owls is probably one of those. All right, I don't know for a fact that it is, but Parliament of Owls, even though I think it's pretty cool, is probably one of those. And so therefore, I don't put a lot of stock in them. I think they're kind of silly. And so every time I see an internet fact about, did you know that a group of flamingos is called a flamboyance? Oh, please. Right, and I wish I had another example because I already used that one. But it drives me crazy. I don't like them. And maybe I'll find out that a flamboyance of flamingos has been something that we derived from Old English, and it's been around since before Isaac Newton. Maybe. I doubt it, though. All right? I don't put a lot of stock in those. If I did, it would be Parliament of Owls. But in general, I don't. And if we're just talking about the coolest genus name, then it's definitely Procyon. Procyon is awesome. That would be a great name for a planet. That would be a great name for a robot. But as it turns out, no, it's the genus name for raccoon. Procyon. That's pretty damn good, right? One more. All right, 19. 19 is from someone who listens to this podcast, I imagine. It's from Ronster. All right, Ron, you get to be our final one of the day. How many characters have you killed off during your GM career? This is embarrassing, but none. Yeah, I know. I'm a wuss. I have never killed off a player character, ever. I have never been present in a game as a player for the death of a player character. I have never once been involved in a game in which a player character died. Either as game master or as player, I've never been involved in that. And I'm not saying I necessarily am inviting that, Pat. I'm not saying that I want someone in our group to die. But I do feel like it is a serious hole in my resume. Never? What kind of wuss am I? Seriously. At some point. But you know what? So I play stories where at the end the protagonists live. Even though in the first Hobbit movie, when they've got 13 dwarves and a hobbit all sliding down these rickety bridges and rope swings through hordes of goblins, as literally how many goblins fell to their deaths in those scenes in the first Hobbit movie? Seriously, how many goblins fell to their deaths off those bridges, over those cliffs? Hundreds? Probably? Yeah, hundreds. Okay. And yet, through all of that rickety, really bad video game scripted-looking action, and not to say that it was bad-looking action, but the first Hobbit movie is my least favorite of the Hobbit movies. But somehow all of them live, really, all of them, through that. I mean, I have no problem with all of them living, but then, for God's sake, don't put them through this harrowing meat grinder where somehow, miraculously, by random coincidence, they all happen to make it out alive. All right? But that's the kind of game that I play, is that in my games, you know what? The protagonists all come out all right in the end. And if anyone... No, wait. I was wrong. Mike was wrong! Oh God, I just had a Mike was wrong this week. It was even Pat that pointed it out. Where was that? Oh, God, yeah, we were talking about rules. We were talking about Pathfinder rules, and I quoted a rule, and he immediately came up with, Mike was wrong, and explained how I absolutely didn't know what I was talking about. It was really funny. But no, I did. I did kill characters. Because I was just about to say, I would be okay, you know, because in my stories, the heroes always live. But I would be okay with killing off some characters if it had some dramatic poignancy, if there was some reason, story reason for them to die and their deaths were meaningful. And then the minute I thought of saying that, I realized, oh, I did kill them once. But they, again, they set themselves up to die. They knew that it was going to happen when they were putting it together, or at least they knew that there was a very strong possibility that they were going to die. And of all games, it was Terror at Camp Pinewood. It was the Boy Scout game where they're playing a troop of Boy Scouts going through this horrifying situation. And at the very end, they find this giant nightmare generator that is creating all of these problems in their world. And the Boy Scouts, who are not old enough to drive at this point, but they do find keys to a car and they get the thing started up and they don't know what they're doing, but they manage to drive the thing down to where this nightmare generator is. And then they intentionally crash it headlong into the thing to take it out. It was the only way they could get close enough to take out the thing that is causing all this death and destruction. And they wound up dying in the process. The two of them, you know, like Thelma and Louise, held hands and boom, drove right into their destiny. And they wound up dying. But that was the grand climax of the game. It took out the bad guy, took out the generator, and sure enough, everything went back to normal, and the rest of the troop lives, the world restores itself, and they were heroes. Dead heroes, but heroes. So, okay, one time I have killed off PCs, and in that one instance I killed off two of them at the same time. But again, it was kind of their choice. I mean, it was meaningful to the storyline. So it was satisfying. I wouldn't count it off. It's not really killing off a PC. Because there's a specific meaning for that term in my mind. The idea that, you know what, in the course of a game, sometimes stupid stuff happens and people just die. And it doesn't necessarily have to be meaningful. It doesn't have to be some obviously pre-scripted thing that you know, this was the game ender. When I think of hey, have you ever killed anybody in your campaign? I'm thinking about the times where, you know, someone dies and then, well, now they got to wait a session or two and bring in a new character because the story is still going on. And so that part I've never done. But maybe someday, maybe not. Either way makes me happy. I don't care. All right. That is the end of episode 85 of Nerd Pride Radio. So it's time for a summary from GLaDOS. Take it away, GLaDOS.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage, and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, then spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page, Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, two-thirds of a dozen others, all free, all the time. If you want to contact me, you could always email me at mike@nerdprideradio, like Billy Bob does, and I promise I will actually respond to you. Or you can find me on Twitter, where my handle is @nerdprideradio, or even check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio, like Nelly has done, and she keeps liking all of my stuff. And it turns out, by the way, the Facebook likes actually makes a difference to my reach and contacts and distribution, and not much because I don't have many of you yet. But you know what? If you've got some time to go like my stuff on Facebook, I would appreciate it. That would be cool. But to be totally honest, the very best way to get in touch with me is you come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together, we'll be best friends in the world. We'll have fun! And Now that we've reached the post-credits portion of the show, it's time for a little listener betrayal. At the beginning of every episode, when I start recording, I go ahead and post it out on my forums, and I ask people if they want to take this last-minute opportunity to contribute something to the podcast. And so, while I was just talking to you now, Alaya had a couple of things to add. So, hold on a second. Ow, my foot's asleep. That's really uncomfortable. Let me go out and look. Oh, and I also said this time, I mixed it up. I said, hey, you got anything to add? And what's your favorite Muppet? Alihad posts up and says, you were right about the, you were right about the Puckwudgies. They're really cool. They kind of sound like even more anthropomorphized Sonic the Hedgehogs. Yeah, that's actually, that's a good comparison. The Puckwudgies are the little, Native American mythology, half fairy troll porcupine creatures. Super cool. That was last episode. And yeah, you're absolutely right, dude. Super cool. He says, My favorite non-Muppet show Muppet is Snuffleupagus. Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one. My favorite Muppet Show Muppet are the lovable space aliens. Yeah. Yup. And then telephone. Ring. Ring. Yeah. I like those. Followed by Beaker, who, oh, I love Beaker. And followed by Fozzie. Oh, you know what? Fozzie was actually my brother's favorite, Kyle, when he was a kid. At least I think it was his favorite. That's the memory I have of it. Maybe I'm making that up. But yeah, oh, Beaker is one of my favorites. Love Beaker. Who, again, Beaker really looks more like an Erlenmeyer flask, but there you go. What are you going to do? Which I can't. We're watching Breaking Bad, and every time, every time they mention Erlenmeyer flasks on the show, and you think to yourself, every time? How many times are they mentioning Erlenmeyer flasks? I don't know, at least two or three episodes now. Every time he says Erlenmeyer flask on the show, or even now that Jesse, it was one of my favorite moments in Breaking Bad, is, first off, every time someone says Erlenmeyer flask, let me finish this thought first. Every time someone says Erlenmeyer flask, my first thought is Beaker. That's right, Beaker on The Muppet Show. He actually more closely resembles an Erlenmeyer flask. That's how I know Erlenmeyer flask. And so, on Breaking Bad, I don't know why I love this moment so much, but, look, if you don't want any Breaking Bad spoilers, just fast forward to the end of the podcast now and be done. I'm not really spoiling anything. Look, you know he's cooking meth on the show. That's the whole point. Chemistry teacher, he gets cancer, he turns to cooking meth to help support his family and pay for his cancer treatments. Okay, I knew all that before the show was even released. And so in this, Jesse Pinkman is his partner in crime right away. All right, again, I'm not giving away anything. But there's a point where, in the beginning, he's trying to educate Jesse on what it is that he's doing here. And he mentions his Erlenmeyer flask, and he talks about it. All right, anyway. Later on, when Jesse is in with all the cooking equipment, and he's got his buddy in there, his big old dumb idiot buddy, and the guy says something or grabs something, and I think he calls it a beaker at the time, but whatever it was, he makes some reference to it, and Jesse has to snatch it out of his hands and goes, that's an Erlenmeyer flask, as if, you moron. There's something about that I love. Obviously, it's the writer's way of letting us know that, you know, Jesse is stepping up his game. Jesse's picking up something here. He's learning. They're rubbing off on each other. It was a cute moment. Really liked that. I love Beaker as well, to get back to the original topic. All right, I'm finishing up. I'm finishing up Eli Head's first post here. So he just got done with his Muppets, and then he says, and I'm quoting, you keep asking us to ask you, so I thought I should. How are you doing? I am awesome! Dude, busy. Crazy busy. And it was actually a struggle tonight to sit down and record the podcast. And I'm glad I did. I feel right now, I feel like it was rambling and disjointed and wild, unlistenable probably. But I always think that. And sometimes the ones that I'm so worried are going to be horrible are the ones that are really, really good in retrospect. When I go back to listen to them, I'm like, hey, that wasn't so bad. I mean, okay, I wouldn't have done that if I had been, you know, actually scripting this and putting in some forethought. But, you know, whatever. And I'm hoping that that's what this one is, because it feels weird right now, this everything I've talked about. But it was really super important for me to get on and record tonight, because I know I'm not going to be here next week. And this is the time of year that gets me every year. I mean, this is 4 years in a row. Is that what's been? 3 years in a row? 4 years in a row? We get around to April, and I start getting spotty. I start going, oh, every other week, every once a month. Last time it was I slowed down starting in February and wound up with, you know, like two episodes in February, two in March, one in April, and then, oh, I'm done, and I disappear. And I don't want to do that. I want to record all summer. I want to keep giving you guys material. And so I made a schedule. I'm trying to stick to it. And even though, okay, I know next week is going to be damn near impossible, I'm still going to make an effort. But if next week doesn't happen, next week doesn't happen. But it was really important that I get one out this week, because it feels important in making sure that I'm sticking to the schedule, making sure that I'm going to get material out for you guys. So I'm hoping that I hope I pull through. I would like to. But yeah, tired, busy, lots of stuff going on. Can't wait for the next week to be over, because we're going to get through post-prom and all that scout stuff and all this end-of-year stuff. And then I think I'm going to take that next Monday off and just crash. And then things start to ease up. I mean, summer's always busy, too. It's not like, you know, vacation isn't always vacation. But we got a lot of fun things coming up. So anyway, doing good. I am awesome. And then Elihad posts a second post after that to say, oh, and I know that he won't hear this for another 8.5 months or so, but I owe your brother an apology. You don't owe him anything. All right, that sleazeball got what was coming to him, dude. I have no idea what you're talking about. Let's read further. Elihad says, Kyle, I'm sorry. Right around the time of my last hero battle game, I was having a really hard time in my life, and when you approached me about an alliance and then didn't believe me when I said you didn't believe me when I said I was an alliance of one. Me, just me, no one else, only me. I was angry. Not angry so much as significantly peeved at you. It was petty and selfish of me to be so affected by your actions at the time, when really you were just trying to win the game. I couldn't see that. I tried briefly to see it, but I was only feeling my own selfish pride get in the way. I blamed you for my ills, and the blame was clearly misplaced. So I apologize for being miffed at you. It's not you, it's me. I hope someday you'll find it in your left ventricle to forgive me, but until then, I wait with bated breath for you to call. I have chocolate. Chocolate for you, sweetie. Miss you, XOXO. Aw, that is so touching, but again, he doesn't deserve your apology. You have nothing to apologize for. He's not even listening to this. He's not going to hear this for 8.5 months, just like you say, if even then. Like I say, I'm putting it at, how many episodes have I put out in 2016 that he hasn't listened to? 2015? He'll listen to them in 2016. How many do I have? Let's take a look. Hold on. I know. This is great radio. Watch me click around on the internet. But Nerd Pride Radio episode guide, there it is. All right, starting in 2015. Yeah, see, episode 72 was the last one of 2014. So that means I have now put out 13 episodes. How fast do you think he's going to listen to these when 2016 rolls around? I mean, obviously, look, my podcast will be the first one he listens to. And he has 2 hours of commute time every day. He's got an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening. All right. And my podcasts generally run about 75 minutes. So he will probably get through one podcast a day while commuting, but I don't think he drives in every day. I think he has one work from home day a week, and he's not going to listen to my podcast every day. Some days he's going to have other stuff to do, phone calls to make, things are going to distract him. So what do you think? Two a week is probably what he's going to do. Maybe, no, let's give him credit for three a week. Because he claims that he listens to my podcast with his kids. So, sometimes. So maybe there's going to be some extras fitted in there. But I'm thinking 13 episodes for him to get to this one. Yeah, I think three a week. I'm being generous. I'm being generous thinking that he's going to do three a week of my podcast. If I know him, he's going to come up with a schedule to listen to all the missed podcasts he has from my feed and others and listen to them all in chronological order. So if that's the case, this may take even longer. But if he was dedicated to just catching up on Nerd Pride Radio first, that puts him at listening to this particular episode. Yeah, it's really got to be second week of February. That's if he's dedicated. And he's concentrating solely on this first. If he decides to spread them out, because, hey, I've got so many podcasts, some are better, some are worse, but you know what? Let's balance them out and put them in a rotation. See, if he does that, then I'm guessing it is April before he hears this one. Yeah. But no, mid-February is probably closer. So see, there you go. He's not even going to hear this for mid-February, puts that at 10 months from now, really. Oh, Kyle, I'm so disappointed at you. I you know what? Nope, never mind. I will do that next time. I have this week I asked about Muppets. Next week, well, not next week, 2 weeks from now when I do the next episode, I've got a question. We'll ask about Kyle. We'll send messages to Kyle. It'll be awesome. But in the meantime, hey, that's the end of my listener betrayal. That's the end of this episode. Thank you for putting up with me, guys. Really, I appreciate you being here, even at my worst moments. So it's been fun. I really enjoyed myself. Say goodnight, R2.